I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX 205. So when I'm on vacation, I'm fairly checked out of the news, but I'll still check my phone and put CNN on now and then. And there was a story midweek where the president was on the roof of the White House, and a story where a fan was throwing sex toys on the ground at the WNBA. And I conflated those two and went out and told my family, Donald Trump's on the roof of the White House throwing sex toys.
Oh.
Yeah.
You mixed them up?
Yep, I did.
Well,
it made for a better story.
I was going to say, that's pretty sensational.
And no one really went crazy. I mean, yeah, that's about right.
You know, anything's possible.
Attorney Brad Young joins us several times per week, and he joins us now. Hello, Brad.
Dave, welcome home, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Okay, so Donald Trump, with, I guess, the stroke of a pen once again, has federalized the District of Columbia police. Is it effective? Is it constitutional? And what does it mean?
Well, first of all, this is a lot different than what we saw in California a couple of months ago, because there are a lot of hoops legally to jump through to federalize the National Guard in a state. But remember, Washington, D.C. is not a state. It's a district. And in fact, there's it's called the District of Columbia Home Rule Act of 1973. And in particular,
uh-oh.
I think the connection just...
I think he's just being coquettish.
There he is.
There he is. Nope.
What's going on?
Okay. What if Brad's...
Wow.
What if Brad's punking us?
Yeah.
I'm still here. I don't know what's going on here.
We're hoping you're crashing
out. But I will
out.
Tell you this. Wow. I don't know where that came from. Anyway, I don't know. I have no idea. But let me go back over this. Because under the District of Columbia Home Rule Act of 1973, under that, it basically gives the president, and unilaterally gives the president, the power for 48 hours to nationalize the Metropolitan Police Department of Washington, D.C. So he can do that without any other approval. All he has to do is declare an emergency, and the power is his.
But only 48 hours.
Well, there's one contingency. As I reviewed that act today, if the president gives notice to the chairman of the ranking and the ranking minority members of relevant congressional committees, at that point, the control extends to 30 days without any actual approval of Congress. So, In essence, he's got 30 days to take control of the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Department.
So what could make that permanent? Would that be an act of Congress?
It would have to take an act of Congress. It would be a joint resolution of Congress. It wouldn't require a supermajority. It would require a majority vote in both houses. And then at that point, there could be some additional power granted or an extension of that power. But the bottom line is, unlike in a state, the president can do this. And what I thought was interesting, though, Dave, is this. He makes the argument that there's some spike in crime. But when I looked at the crime statistics for D.C., they've actually fallen 26% in the first seven months. Last year, they dropped 35%. That's for violent crime. Overall crime is down 7%. So what really this is, I think, is a reaction to a member of DOJ who was carjacked last week, and this is his response to that carjacking.
So, Brad, if you know, is this the kind of situation where the feds can direct local D.C. cops, or is it just in addition to they're out there on the corners?
No, they can actually direct them. And in fact, under Section 740 of the District of Columbia Home Rule Act, there is a person designated to be literally the acting mayor. So the mayor is stripped of her responsibilities under this provision, because everything in D.C. is at the direction and control of Congress. Congress passed this law back in 1973. So in essence, right now, Pam Bondi is the mayor of Washington, D.C. for the next 48 hours and potentially for the next 30 days. Hmm.
Thoughts around the room? Comfortable with it?
No, but I wouldn't be with anybody doing that. It's been my biggest complaint for as long as I can remember that we allow too much overreach from the president's office. I don't think we need to be giving them less power and not allowing more. We're not supposed to have one person that just gets to decide things,
which is
including tariffs and everything else. I mean, that's supposed to be in the hands of Congress, but we're allowing that.
Yeah, Brad and I have talked about this several times in our little chats here, that the one thing that we will walk away from the second Trump administration is new case law on expanding the executive branch. Don't you think, Brad?
Oh, absolutely. There's this concept. It's called the imperial presidency. And that's not new with Donald Trump. It's been around for decades. And it's this idea that we need a super strong executive in order to make decisions. Because, listen, Congress, they can't decide that today's Monday. All right. So you have to have someone who can act unilaterally in times of crisis, in times of stress or disorder. And that's called the imperial presidency. So what we're seeing is the downside. But there is also the flip side. I'm not arguing for the imperial presidency. I'm just saying that, like in all situations, there's pros and cons. The con of an imperial presidency is what we're seeing now. The benefit is, in times of crisis, Congress, you know, they can't do anything. And so they're hobbled by the fact that they cannot act with speed or with decisions in a timely fashion. So those are both sides of this coin of the imperial presidency.
Right. The problem is defining emergency. We just can't call things emergency. We can't just say this is an emergency. There should be a standard for, and I don't, maybe there is, Brad, and I just don't know it, a legal standard for what constitutes an emergency.
No, there's no legal standard. And let me tell you why. There's a very easy answer to that, Wheels, and that's this. The Supreme Court has this term that's a political question. In times like this, what does the word emergency mean? The Supreme Court's never going to define that because they want Congress and the executive branch to work that out. But in our modern day, Congress and the executive branch can't work out anything. And so that's how we so often find ourselves in this situation. Now, look, with this, the District of Columbia Home Rule Act, Congress gave this authority to the president in 1973. So just like the tariffs. The tariff authority the president has was given to the president by Congress in multiple different statutes. So therein lies the problem when you have a branch of government that says, let's let somebody else deal with it. We'll punt it over to them. Therein lies the problem.
Brad, let's talk a little bit more about, you know, the plan to move unhoused folks out of D.C. Do you know if that's something that the National Guard will be handling? I mean, they're saying, like, we just need to move them out of D.C. We got to get them out from the overpasses and the sidewalks. They need to be far away from here. Do you know anything about an actual plan there?
Well, certainly the government hasn't released any sort of a plan. In theory, if you want to talk about legally, not necessarily politically, in theory, I think that the president would have the statutory authority to do that under this District of Columbia Home Rule Act. Politically, that's a whole nother question. I mean, think about the visuals when you've got guys literally dressed up in Army gear. They're National Guard, but they're dressed up in Army gear, hauling out homeless people and putting them into trucks. The visual of that, the optics of that act, I think are horrendous. And so you've got both the political side and the legal side. Mm.
Although that's one of my problems with MAGA, and I am talking with a broad brush. I have lots of friends who are MAGA who would disagree with this, but to the extent that there's an arm of MAGA that would love to see homeless people being taken away in trucks, that is troubling to me.
Well, yeah, there's always going to be a small fringe on both sides of the ideological spectrum that really like this kind of action. But the reality still is, as much as we don't think necessarily it is the case that the majority center still does make these kinds of decisions. And the vast majority of people in the center would be horrified by seeing National Guard troops hauling out homeless people. Now, Rachel, to your other point about can they do it? I talked about the National Guard. One thing that the military cannot do is enforce laws against the civilian population. That's called the Posse Comitatus Act. That goes back to, I think, 1878.
Okay, at this point, you're just making crap up.
I'm not. You looked me up.
Like the first couple times I was impressed, but the Posse Comitatus, like, okay.
No. The Posse Comitatus Act of 18, I think it's 1878. It might be 1875.
Sure.
But that prevents federal troops from being used to enforce laws against the civilian population.
Wow. So let me ask you this, and this is more political than it is legal, and you probably don't know, but Trump is not stupid. I don't think he's a dumb person by any stretch, and he has a real gift for politics, but he doesn't know this stuff. He doesn't know about any of these acts. Who is it in his world that's telling him this stuff and giving him this great advice for his purposes?
Oh, I don't think it flows like how you think it flows, Dave. I think what happens is he comes to a group of folks, his advisors, and says, I want to clean up the streets of D.C. How do we make it happen? And then those people figure out how to make it happen. I don't think anybody's coming to him saying, you know, Mr. President, if we use the District of Columbia Home Rule Act of 1973, we can do A, B, C, or D. I think he just barks out what he wants, and then it's up to people to figure out how to make that happen.
They're pretty good at it. I'll give him that. Like, he's been successful.
He has been successful, and oftentimes he's his own worst enemy. But the clip that we heard at the top of the hour where people were claiming, oh, the president can't do this. Listen, I call balls and strikes here. The president can do this. It's a different question whether he should, but clearly the legal authority is there for him to do this.
Very good. All right, we'll talk to you on Thursday, if not before. Thank you, Brad.
All right, you're welcome.
Maker upper.
That's one of the only legal terms I ever learned in school.
Maker upper?
No, the posse one.
Oh, careful.
It's that and what was the other one?
Be very careful.
It's that one and then the, what's that, the one where you got to produce the person you're charging.
Habeas corpus.
That
you knew the posse thing for real?
Yeah. I learned it in high school at some point. I didn't really understand it. I just knew that it meant you couldn't like use the military to attack your citizens.
In high school, I learned how to make a bong out of a squirrel.
Oh.
Yeah, I learned how to eat glue sticks.
Between the two things, one was probably more useful than the other.
Welcome back, guys. GGS on KMOX. Bernie Mc...
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
be an artist,
be an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Chris will join us at the bottom of the hour, do a little update on the Cardinals. Brian says, question for DGS, since you guys work downtown, have you seen any difference in the homelessness and open drug use downtown right in front of City Hall? Was curious if there are any differences with Kara Spencer. I've not done any sort of in-depth anything except just live my life down here. And it seems to me that the homeless people and the drug users just move from one block to another.
Over time, yeah.
And now they are on our block.
Right behind our studio.
It seems like it's a bigger problem than it was 6 months ago. But if we were where they used to be, we'd be thinking, oh, something has cleared up.
Well, it was mostly the Fireman's Memorial that parked there. That's where a lot of it was before.
Yeah.
That got moved out. And they moved, I mean, like, and I don't think it's one. I think there are several different kind of groups.
Yes.
But there is migration. The thing that's different is there are no gates citing fake work going on around City Hall. That's the one, that's the only noticeable change. Everything else is about the same.
Yes.
And then if you go down Tucker towards the Museo Bridge in that area, there's a little area that was a vacant lot that is now a homeless town.
So,
like a tent city type
thing. I don't know the legalities of it.
Right.
But I can tell you that if someone wanted to, quote unquote, clean up downtown from people who are literally bent over, zombified from drugs, I can take you right to them.
Yeah.
I can show you right where they are.
Yeah.
And if I know that, then the cops know that. And if the cops know that, then the administration knows that. So there's some legal reason that they can't do that, or some political reason that they won't do it, or some moral reason that they won't do it. But it's not for not knowing where it is.
Yeah, I think it's because there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, where are you going to take people?
I mean, if you take someone who is clearly high and maybe having a bad experience or whatever, okay, you can take them to jail. How long can you keep them?
Right.
And if you're just going to end up having to turn people back out to the streets when they're done, like when they're sober or when they've cleaned up or when whatever the amount of time is pending a trial or whatever, well, who's to say that person's even going to show up for a trial? I mean, I think it's probably just more the practicality that it's like moving sand on the beach. That you can move it, but sooner or later, the tide's going to push it back.
Although, and I have a great deal of compassion for people downtown because I've been with them now for so many decades. But at some point, there's also the making it as unpleasant as possible. You know, I mean, there used to be vagrancy laws where it's, you know, like the classic, the cop waking the guy up, sleeping on the park bench, hey, you can't sleep here kind of thing. Like, there are things you could do. We've just stopped doing them.
Here's the, I mean, to me, that there's an interesting, this is all just piecing together. This is not with any super inside knowledge or anything like that. But of all the places that people are going to be homeless, the one place, there are places that people, are residents, don't want them to be. They don't want them in the neighborhoods where they live. Mm-hmm. Well, downtown, this part of downtown is not significantly residential.
Yeah.
We're in a building that has residential apartments, right? But like that's not what dominates this several block area.
Yeah,
it's not by the ballpark. You don't see too much of that. Like, you see a little bit over there, but very little compared to what we see where we are, right? So if you're trying to manage it, I don't know how you get rid of, quote unquote, get rid of that many people.
And I can tell you, like tonight, I'm going to the game, and somewhere in the 9 o'clock range, I will walk back from Busch Stadium to Tucker and Olive by myself, and I will have my head on a swivel, but I won't be worried.
No.
That's not the problem. For normies, though, who don't have their downtown sea legs, it could be pretty scary.
It can be off-putting because you're not sure, but we've seen it. We've seen a lot. I'm more worried about crossing the street.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm a lot more worried about
I'm not worried about being accosted.
No, I'm a lot more worried about how people drive downtown.
Yeah.
And there are times of like, I don't know, like there can be some craziness like we've seen with the drag racing and the doing donuts in intersections and all that. But that doesn't seem to be a constant regular thing. Just if I saw that, I would avoid that because that's where you're probably going to get hit by a car. You're going to get caught up in something, some nonsense. That's not like a regular thing that we see all the time.
No. And like just walking around every day. I mean, what, Rach? Once a month we get asked for money. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's an everyday thing. It's just, you're just sharing downtown.
That, I mean, ultimately, that's the hard question, right? What do you do? Let's say, I don't know what the number is, but let's say it's 1,000 people.
Yeah. Probably pretty close.
Yeah. What's the solution to it? Because where do you move someone? I mean, like, so you're not moving them to the Central West End. You're not moving them into a neighborhood. You're not moving them to some magical apartment complex hospital that doesn't exist. And even if you do, they're free Americans. You cannot just make them stay somewhere.
Well, and, you know, a lot of people say a lot of these people are brought here by other areas in our region, like they're being funneled downtown, like intentionally. So, I mean, what do you do at that point, too? You don't care, but I want you to know.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX, back from vacation. Good to be back. Bernie Miklas joins us. Hello, Bern.
Good to hear your voice again, Dave. How's everything?
Everything's good, man. You know how it is, a week on the beach and fills you back up creatively and ready to go.
I could use some of that. So I'm going to follow your lead, maybe.
Yeah, man. I had not been since before my mom passed away, which is crazy. I mean, when something like that happens, you have to do self-care, take care of yourself, at least take a big, long weekend. But when I realized that, I was like, okay, it's time. You know, you get this burn. Like, you get to the point where you're scraping the bottom of a rusty bucket and you just got to get away.
No doubt about it. I'm not trying to say this like a humble brag, because I really truly love work, but there are times when it's almost, you know, someone has to like drag me away from work. Yeah. And then which is stupid, because then I realize how much I benefit from taking some downtime.
Yeah. I mean, what both of us do is important. People like it. People rely on it. Entertainment, information. But if either of us stop it for a week, the world keeps on spinning.
Yeah, same for all of us, right? Yeah,
that's
same
right.
Same for all of us.
So my takeaway from vacation, apropos of baseball, is I watched a lot of Little League World Series baseball. And it was so much fun. These kids are great players, great fundamentals, just really lit a new fire of my love of baseball. And when it comes to this Cardinals team, I think I'm going to hit 25 games tonight. I love this team. Is it the best team I've ever watched? No. Are there problems? Yes, some glaring. But I applaud them for being where they are, given all the circumstances around them.
Well, I feel the same way. Don't get me wrong. As you know, and Kevin Wheeler knows, I don't hesitate to point out things that I don't like as far as just performance-related issues, you know, or to say, well, the Cardinals need to do this or they shouldn't play this guy so much. That's baseball stuff. But as far as the team personality, I like it a lot. I've liked it a lot all season. Just when I'm ready to say, well, you know, stick a fork in it. I hope they're not going to finish 10 games under 500 or things like that. They kind of snap back. They get back. They clap back. They rally. And they show a lot of resilience. I mean, they're doing it again. I mean, they had a terrible, terrible time coming out of the All-Star break. And it looked like it was going to be one of those free falls. But then they go and, you know, they go 3-3 against the Padres and the Dodgers. They beat the Dodgers in a series. They come back, beat the Cubs in a series. And, you know, they had plenty of chances to lose some of those games, but they fought through it and won the third game of the Dodger series, won the third game of the Cubs series. And it was a good reminder that, like, there are things – there are reasons why I really like this team. I know their limitations, but I still like the team a lot.
Yeah, one thing I was just telling Wheels this over lunch today, that I've always been such a fan, but not a student. And so I was a fan as a kid of Dave Concepcion and Pete Rose and Kenny Reitz. And like, I like position players. I like hitters. I've really come this year to appreciate just how critical pitching is.
Well, it really is. And I don't have it in front of me because I'm like the mad scientist in my office. So I'm just always constantly calculating numbers. But I went and studied the playoff field since they switched to, they added the extra wild card. That was 2022. And it was a really, really high, really high percentage of teams that have made the playoffs since 2022. High percentage of them were top 10 in starting pitching ERA. And, you know, most bullpens are in good shape, but if you don't have starting pitching, the percentages tell us it's possible to make the playoffs, but you're really, really up against it.
It is. It's a fascinating thing, too, Byrne, when you look at what matters for 6 months and then what matters in the postseason, right? Like, for 6 months, you need starting pitching. You're going to burn out. You're not going to make it. You're not going to be able to win. And in the playoffs, it matters, especially if you have studs. Like, if you've got front-end, you know, power arm-type pitchers, that really matters. But then it becomes more about the bullpens because teams start going to the bullpen in the fourth and fifth inning, second, you know, third time through the order, when they get into the playoffs, and you can be more aggressive in that way. And I don't know that, and that's why I think you see teams in the off season and in spring training tend to try to build rotations for contenders. And then at the trade deadline, you load up on relievers and try to have all of it going into the playoffs.
Yeah, that's definitely true. In fact, I think one of the most impressive things about Tony La Russa's Hall of Fame managerial career was that in 2011, this kind of thing had never been done before. 2011, he front-loaded his bullpen into games.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really one of the leading reasons why they won the World Series. He didn't hesitate. He had those guys up and ready to go at any moment's notice. So, I give Tony a lot of credit for sort of change in the game and the way teams view their bullpens going into the postseason. And it's gotten even more and more and more in terms of the priority on having a powerful bullpen.
I think that was the first team in baseball history that won the World Series with more innings from the bullpen than from the starters in the playoffs.
Yep.
I think that was correct. And obviously that, you know, leave it to Tony to be an innovator in that regard, because a lot of what we've seen from modern bullpen use comes from what he and Dave Duncan did and what they started with Oakland, with slotting in specialty guys and, you know, like the Rick Honeycutts of the world leading into Dennis Eckersley and things along those lines. And now what's interesting, Byrne, and I was looking at this over the weekend because I was thinking of this with Riley O'Brien and JoJo Romero and how they're kind of sharing the most important spots at the end of games, where now it used to be, this is my sixth inning guy, my seventh inning guy. Remember the Royals, it was Herrera to Davis to Holland. And it was like that three, like seventh, eighth, ninth is how we're doing it. But now it's more a lane and not an inning. So these hitters are for JoJo. These hitters are for Riley O'Brien. And we kind of look at that and play it out as the game goes along.
You know, and one of the things, I know this isn't anything to do with the postseason, although the Cardinals, you know, I think like last year, had they snuck into the postseason, I think the bullpen would have been a real asset. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. They might have been able to win a series or something. But one thing Ollie Marmol has done better than anything else, other than you know, build loyalty among the players, have a great relationship with his players, Ollie Marmol is really, really, really good at putting a bullpen together. And that's happened even after they've traded their three guys. You know, I looked at this today. There were they've played nine games since they traded Helsley and Maton in March, and two of the bullpen performances were really bad. Okay, you put them aside, but in the other seven games, they had a bullpen ERA of like 1.73. He's doing it again. So I don't think it's easy to put a bullpen together. This manager's done a whale of a job at it 2 years in a row.
Yeah, I agree.
In 2023, he never had a chance. So, no, he didn't.
Did. You're totally right. And what's you know, as we look at what can be interesting the rest of the way, I mean, it's still not likely, you know, that you're going to make a push. But it is funny that we're getting into mid-August and you sold at the deadline and you're only 3.5 games out of the last wild card, largely because the Mets can't stop losing right now. If the Mets level off, that's probably going to be a more like 5 or 6 real quick. But the fact that they're losing keeps it funny.
I did a whole video on that this morning. I commended the Cardinals and thought it was funny that the Cardinals went from, August the 5th. They were 6.5 games out. All of a sudden, they're 3.5 games out of the third spot. But it's more than anything, it's because the New York Mets have just like spit out the bit. They're atrocious. They've lost 11 out of their last 12, you know, and so it's more about the Mets collapsing.
Totally.
But the Cardinals have won 4 out of 6. So even if the Mets collapsed, if the Cardinals weren't winning games, it wouldn't matter. But the Cardinals have been doing their part to win some games. So I actually think it's really fun to watch. The odds are very much stacked against them for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think it's fun to watch. I'm glad that. It's another reason why Dave Glover really loves this team. It's another reason why I respect this team, because there's something about them. It's kind of like, well, hey, you know, go ahead and tell them they can't do something. They'll try really hard to disprove you.
So two things. First of all, just a statement. My already healthy respect for Ollie grew in not only the fact that he allowed Molina to be in the dugout, but the way he did it with such grace and ease. I was really impressed by that. When everyone and their uncle's like, there's his replacement. like, really nice job on Ollie. And then secondly, question to you, Byrne. If you are Chaim Bloom, let's say that the team ends up exactly where it is in a month from now. Are you licking your chops at this offseason because there are so many obvious things to do, or are you just like wringing your hands?
No, Chaim Bloom, from what I'm told, and the information's good, he's raring to go, and he's got stuff in mind in terms of making trades. He's got a list, and he's checking it twice as far as players that he's willing to move. And he's intent on moving a couple players. You know, he'll do it in a way, if it happens, which will help set the Cardinals up for the future, especially when it comes to young starting pitching. So he's got a game plan in mind. This is not going to be a twiddling of the thumbs type of offseason. I think it's going to be really busy. And I'm not saying he's going to make, you know, 25 moves, but the moves he makes, I think, will have real magnitude. And so I can't wait. I think the offseason is going to be a lot of fun. But I got to tell, you know, I got to tell Cardinals fans what I know, though. If you're waiting for a big increase in payroll, it's not coming. If you're waiting for any real increase in payroll, it's not coming. They are going to rebuild this thing, and what they're going to do, I'm going to use a barbecue term. When I smoke a brisket or a pork butt, they're going to do it low and slow. They're not. This is not going to be. Well, we better go spend some money, and it's okay if it's stupid. We got to get the fans off our back. Well, the fans who are smart realize they got to stop doing stuff like that, and I think they realize that after this era of like unprecedented excess by the St. Louis Cardinals, I mean, things kind of hit the wall here. You know, they're due for a rebuild. It's not the worst thing in the world. In fact, the Cardinals are able to dodge this for many, 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 many years. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to do it, you got to do it right. And it's not taking these doing these half measure signings that really don't make you better. So I think we're going to find out who the real fans are this winter. Like if once Chaim Bloom comes out and says, look, I'm asking for your patience. We have to do this, but we're going to do it the right way. And it might not be, you know, always easy. And you may get frustrated with this, but we will come out of it better than we are. And we will have a much better future because of it. I'm totally cool with that because I'm tired of like keeping this thing in the mediocre middle. You got to build something, man. And there's no quick solutions. There's no shortcuts.
Burn, tell us about Saliga before we let you go.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. So I thought this was an interesting story I saw on my break. A company with 10 employees has made a new rule that if two people go to lunch together, they must invite everyone else to go.
A company with 10 employees?
Yes.
Did they give the reason why they want this?
Yes, because it fosters unrest within the troops and cliques for just these two people to go or these three people to go or there's a little coffee clutch or there's a little lunch club. And so if you and I go, we have to invite everybody.
Is this kindergarten?
No, it's a real company.
Okay, so we're treating everybody like children.
Pretty much.
Not a fan.
I get it, right? Like, if it's only 10 people, right, and they're worried that they have problems forming of people clicking up and talking crap about everybody else or whatever. I don't know. I mean, I don't...
Would you want that here, though? Think of the people you don't like here.
Yeah, but there's like 100 people here.
Yeah, but let's say you got
the people I don't
10.
Like. The people I don't like here is everyone but you guys.
All right, let's just make it simple. Let's say you had to invite Ranji every time we went to lunch. I'm teasing. I love Ranji.
I wouldn't want to invite Ranji.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate like what they're trying to do, but
yeah.
At the end of the day, it's like, can you really tell adults like you must include everyone? Like,
right.
I mean, it's a little patronizing.
I guess that's closer to what I mean. Like Rachel said, like I appreciate what they're trying to do. I think I understand it. I don't know if it like is. I don't know if it works. I don't know if it's a good idea. But I guess I see where it's coming
from.
Shocked
if it worked.
No,
I think people are just people, and people are going to do what they're going to do. It's like water finding its level.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just going to happen.
Yes. If it doesn't happen when two people sneak off to lunch, it's going to happen like just in the break room and someone's going to overhear it and it's going to be a much bigger problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean? It's one thing if like nine people are going and excluding one person.
Yeah, that's pretty awful.
Like that's,
now, that's what's happening.
That's a different conversation.
That is very funny, but also a different
Yeah.
It seems like a rule that Michael Scott from The Office made after being like left out yes. of a lunch. Like, actually, you have to invite everyone because it's not fair when you don't invite people.
This is very much most of The Office went without the like boss and the boss's Dwight. And yeah. now they're upset and right. they're making the rule that they have to be included. Like, too.
You're all allowed to go to lunch by yourselves, but if it's more than one, you got to ask everyone. Because, you know, that's practical, right? Hey, let's all 10 people go to a sandwich place and wait 2 hours because
Paul
we can't
makes
get
a good point. If that's the case, then the company should have to pay for lunch.
Yeah,
because then it's a company wide work lunch.
Even then, though, you can't make that mandatory. You can't be like, you guys can only eat here. Although most people would if it's free.
Rach, you know the walking stick insect that we both abhor?
Yes.
They found one that was 18 inches long in Australia.
No, they didn't.
Nice. This thing is crazy. I saw this thing.
Why are those scary?
It weighs like 2 pounds.
Because it's a stick.
It walks.
But it's not. It's
that's
a log.
It looks
that's
like a
stick. That's what makes it horrible.
It's a log bug. Yeah, sticks aren't scary, Kevin. The fact that it's a stick, a bug that looks like a stick is what's scary.
Like, what if it looked like a rock that would just pick up and run across the beach?
What if it looked like a baseball and you went to grab like it like you do all your baseballs and suddenly it was some sort of
I would
critter.
Love to have a baseball bug.
Suddenly it was some sort of monster.
I mean, the only bugs that are bad are the bitey ones. These guys aren't bitey, right?
I think the walking stick can actually kill you.
Is it a stinger?
Faster than any other bug.
I think she's
right. No, really?
Yes.
I think that they
they're
use knives. Poisons.
No.
Yeah, they're made of fangs and poison.
No.
Like my cousins.
No.
They're malicious.
That they are, for
they
sure.
They talk crap on their friends.
Yeah.
They do. I think they're one of the big bugs. They're like manti. They eat their, like, partners.
The hell's a manti?
A mantis. I tried to plural it.
Yeah.
I didn't know if mantis is a word.
I put in Google, are walking sticks dangerous? And it says, can be if used incorrectly. And I'm like, what? And then it's like, no, they're talking about canes. Like a cane.
You can screw someone up with a walking stick.
Yeah, they are not venomous. They can't hurt you.